Welcome to FIC Focus, where Bloomberg Intelligence fixed income, credit, currency, and commodities strategists and analysts discuss their short and long-term views on debt markets and issuers. Now, here's the Bloomberg Intelligence FIC Research Team.
Welcome to this edition of All Options Considered. I'm Tanvir Sandhu, Chief Global Derivative Strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence. Thanks to those who joined us in London on March the 19th for the first Volatility Forum. And this is the second part of the recording from that forum. This episode is the discussion from the second panel on 0 days to expiry options, options that trade and expire on the same day. I often receive questions on this topic, and the conversations are typically around whether this activity is adding to market fragility. There has been huge growth in this activity, with volumes north of 50% of the total S&P 500 options volume. That was sub 10% 5 years ago. My sense is that the impact from this flow is much more limited than some may make out, and references to the 2018 Volmageddon episode are overdone. The type of flow and strategies look balanced rather than a focus on selling tails for premium, for example. So let's get to the discussion.
I'm thrilled to have a pretty interesting kind of group of guests. We've got Robinhood represented, which I thought was kind of cool. Hello. And Cboe-Eurex, of course, you guys are cool too. I think we have a poll first that we want to kind of speak to. So I'm actually very curious about this. Let's start with a poll. I think there's a QR code behind you if you guys need, but it's going to ask you about whether it's as catastrophic as the panel organizers made me believe it is. So put in your answers. It'll shake out, and for about 20 seconds, I'm supposed to kind of rant while you guys do this. I've never done the volatility story before, but the kind of read-through that I've understood from a more media perspective is that this is a retail-driven story so much. And yet, if you look at some of the numbers, there's so much institutional money that's kind of piling into it all of a sudden. And we're going to dive into kind of the details of that and the dangers of that as well. And I'm hoping I've spoken enough for the polling numbers to come out. They're still staking up, but this is not very comforting, I have to say, that 48%, almost 50% think that zero-day expiry options can actually crash the market. And that's a little scary. So let's start there about what you four think. I'll start with you.
Thank you.
Walk us through it. Thank you for being here. Walk us through it. Is this as scary as I think it is?
I understand the reaction. So my answer is derivatives in the wrong hands are always a risk. And if I look back at the, let's say, the big sort of derivative blow-ups historically, they've normally had, I'd say, a couple of characteristics, which is, as I mentioned, a little bit of knowledge, as I say, is always dangerous. So typically, I would say, the wrong type of user, i.e. an industrial company or some kind of hedger, hedging FX or a rate exposure. It's usually actually long-dated positions that tend to blow up, i.e. there's a margin call. I mean, usually that's associated with some big blow-up. Zero-dated options, we haven't seen that. I think we're in an era where risk management, compared to, say, 10 years ago, has moved along. I can think of scenarios where there could be a blow-up, but it feels to me very much like a corner scenario. I think if we had an example where you had one big buyer of zero DTE taking out multiple market makers, all short gamma on one side, that scenario combined with a macro event, you know, Fed surprises tomorrow, or escalation of the Ukraine war, so a gap movement in the market,
yeah,
that would have to happen for there to be a blow-up risk. I just don't see that at the moment. You know, I think your last panel, actually Tanvir mentioned, a lot of the trading is spread strategy. So yeah. Put spread, call spread, it's essentially risk neutralized from a gap perspective. So I understand the reaction. I don't see it materializing.
And so the take is, just so I'm understanding right, you have to have a big, big block of money to make this doomsday scenario actually materialize, is my understanding.
And specifically on the short gamma side, I think with multiple hedges, exacerbating the hedging on the delta at the same time, to have multiple short gamma positions all essentially trying to front run each other.
Okay, it's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, I think a lot of ifs, yeah.
Fair enough. All right, weigh in here, especially because you're from Robinhood. By the way, on Bloomberg TV today on our show, we had the UK Robinhood CEO kind of come on and talk to us a little bit about whether or not kind of retail trading is as much of a risk as we think it is, or at least as it was perhaps in 2021. Your view from the options perspective?
Well, I think when you look at any growth of a marketplace and take derivatives and options trading, is it has evolved so much in the last 5 to 10 years. So when I started trading almost 20 years ago, I started off by trading an equity, then I went to an option, then I went to a future, then I went to FX, and then eventually I thought I'd do this crazy thing called crypto. And each one of those asset classes, as I was looking to participate in, I was given risks and concerns that are on there.
Can I just say, it sounds like you seek out trouble.
you probably have spoken to my mother then, if that's the case. But no, I do think when you look at something like zero-day options, what's happened is that the risk and the interest of the marketplace for retail investors has gotten shorter. That duration has continued as I think they've had the ability to get more information in their hands. In the old days, you know, a Bloomberg terminal was the only way that you had the ability to access some of this incredible data. Now it's all in the power of your mobile device. So yeah, you can get all types of information. So I think when you look at what can happen, any derivative can have danger if it gets too overexposed on one side or the other, or if the market starts to move. And I think what, more than anything else, to me, what zero-day adoption has allowed you to do is actually be more specific in your risk, right? I can short it down. I can look at earnings plays. I don't have to be a week out. Throughout history, we've always had issues that have come into the marketplace. It wasn't because of the instrument itself. It was the misuse of that instrument. And I think it's a great point that you make. So as we look to see whether this starts to move forward, I think for retail investors, it's never been better. You know, you have deep liquid markets. You have lower fees and costs. You have the ability to access almost, in many cases, 24 hours a day. So not when new cycles are coming out, not when you have to wait 15 or 24 hours for those markets to open up. And I think what you're seeing is globally that access is continuing. So it's not just in the U.S. It's global access to options trading is what retail investors and I think institutional investors want to come together and participate in those markets.
But you said a key word there, the misuse of the product. There is concern that if you give access to or democratize access to finance, which I think is the Robinhood promo or motto, to a retail base that doesn't understand what they're exactly working for, how these contracts work, that in itself is misuse of the product.
Well, I think that's one of the things we focus in on is educating. Like education and financial literacy is the core of as long as I've actually been in this marketplace. I mean, over 20 years, that's what we do. We go out and we educate investors on how to use product. And I think that's really where it comes down to being, and being able to have the information they have at their fingertips. In many cases, what we have seen, I think even at Robinhood, is we've made the ability to access markets simpler, but we've also provided them with more information, more data to be able to then make those decisions. At the end of the day, you want to be educated and know what your risk tolerance is. And we say that whatever asset class is. I wouldn't tell anybody to go in and trade in equity without actually thinking about what does it mean to buy a stock at the price it is. I mean, I think before, Apple, it's the most widely held asset or stock in any portfolio, but it's had all kinds of issues where it's been down this past year because of expectations of earnings and where its growth is. So again, I think you have to look at how you use that and make sure you spend the time and effort to educate yourself. Just like with anything, driving a car, you know, you got to learn how to use it. You just don't go and say, hey, here are the keys to my 10-year-olds, or you talk about dangerous decisions. That's probably a bad decision that would be for me along the way.
You're tempting me to talk about Apple for the next hour, but I won't do it. I will not fall for it. Henry, weigh in here. From the exchange's perspective, who's driving the options volume right now? Is it a risk?
So I've been with Cboe for 4 years. I've been in the business for 34 years, I think. I started in 2020 when Tradelert was acquired. I spent the first couple of years digging into data, talking about the retail boom, and it was mind-blowing what was happening during COVID. You know, we can break out, even using the clearing data, you can break out how much is firm activity, how much is really customer retail. And the firm activity declined during COVID when the market volume was doubling. It was all retail. It was all retail basically against market maker. For the last year, it's the zero DT has been the story. And one of the slides I put together was literally like a, you know, fact versus fiction, because there's a lot of confusion over it. And there's Volmageddon 2.0 and websites popping up that are all about the weaponized gamma. In terms of it being a risk to the market, I don't think it is. There's a lot of confusion over how big the positions are. You know, the fact that these things expire every day, you know, you think about a long dated Vega position, which, you know, when vol goes to 50 or 80 in a crisis, you have these losses that everybody's panicking about. You know, you have issues with, you know, are things marked correctly? It just like filters out and becomes this long term disaster, as what we saw with long term and some of these other situations. The 0 days basically expire, you know, and so if you had a big gap, you're going to have big losses for some participants, but the positions are not very big to begin with. And the other thing that, you know, that, you know, what Zubin said specifically is, you know, if everybody's the same way in a trade, think GameStop upside calls, it's not your fault, but you have really weird things happen, right? I mean, there was during that whole thing, Petterfi was on TV talking about how, I won't try to do his accent, but how, you know, we could have this unsettleable event, right? We could go to infinity if there aren't enough, if there's too many calls and they're all in the money and there's not enough stock and you have buy-ins and literally it could go to a million in a blip. That's not the zero DTE. We do have the ability to kind of dig into, especially, you know, SPX, what's retail, what's institutional. And you're right in what you said at the beginning, which is, It's getting to be more, the participation is more varied, but even when it's all retail, and at the beginning it was very, very heavily retail, you do have most of the activities in vertical spreads, partly because they don't have big enough accounts to do a naked SPX option. And it's very diverse, and these positions are being rolled around. People are using little widgets that effectively turn them into little retail QIS teams. They sell a put spread, they set a stop loss target, they set a profit take target, the system automatically exits and puts on a new one. I've played around with these tools, they're kind of amazing from a retail standpoint. So the one thing I will say is if you take it market wide and you go look at, you know, we have, you know, and everybody needs to know, zero DT is not really a thing. There are short dated options, there's daily options, and yes, every day one of them is going to expire today. But these options are listed about a month until they expire. When you have these across a lot of the market, you know, SPX and SPY are the biggest, but you have NASDAQ and Qs and Russell, and some of the ETFs now have Wednesdays. You do have the potential for like very, very big concentrated position to be created. We really haven't seen it yet, but that would be the only thing that kind of concerns me is you could, but really what we've been seeing for the last, you know, it's a year and a half now since there really were dailies, is the positions are you know, they never get that big, and also they're managed, whatever residual risk is out there in terms of the true gamma that the liquidity side is hedging is being hedged by basically a zero-day team. I've talked to market makers, they're like, yeah, that's the zero-day desk, that's all they trade. And you see it in the data in terms of how much flow is market maker versus customer. The market maker percentage in the 0 day is higher than, it's actually higher than 50%, which means the market makers are actively trading against each other. And that's all basically in controlling the strike risk.
Weigh in, David.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from our perspective, we kind of sit in the middle of the ecosystem and handle an awful lot of flow, I'd say, from the institutional and the retail community. And it's kind of been mentioned that heavily, you know, skewed towards the retail aspect. I think the flows have been, you know, pretty balanced and pretty mixed. And I think it's also important to kind of take a step back and recognize that we didn't just get here overnight, right? Going back to 2005, 2016, you know, 2022, there's been, you know, incremental, you know, expirations that have been added along the course of time. So trading options that expire, you know, in one day is not necessarily a new phenomenon for, you know, the marketplace. But I think that there's more people and more participants that have obviously participated in the, you know, listed option space over the last several years. So in terms of, you know, do we see significant risk? I think it's always something that we're concerned about in protecting the ecosystem. We have a large, you know, retail presence that's facilitated by the liquidity provider community, and having, you know, fair and balanced flow within all those different, you know, aspects of the ecosystem is very important. They become somewhat dependent upon each other. And so when you ask, you know, what are some of the concerns? You know, from our perspective, to some of the people that we speak with, is that the liquidity providing community has become somewhat dependent upon this flow. So if you have certain things, whether it's regulation or some of the margining issues that are now going on, you know, start to clamp down on this activity, and that, you know, that liquidity dries up from the marketplace, you know, you could see some, you know, pockets of liquidity if we get significant moves. So I think those are some important things to keep a close eye on.
Well, David, you mentioned margining, that keyword. We actually just got a question about it as well. Is this market prepared for something like margin calls? Are we? Is that liquidity risk real enough and big enough? And are the exchanges and liquidity providers that you work with ready for it?
Yeah, I mean, to Henry's point, a lot of the flows in the position is not substantial on a one-day basis. But from, you know, a margining perspective, from, you know, some of the people that we talk to, I think there are certain, you know, participants in the ecosystem where there are some concerns. I think from the liquidity providing community, typically, you know, the clearing firms will get drop copies from the exchanges. From the retail firms, they're not letting those trades go out the door unless the client has, you know, the appropriate funds and whatnot. But outside of that space, in the institutional space, where clients may have multiple prime brokers that aren't getting notification of transactions that have occurred till the end of the day, there are definitely certain pockets of the ecosystem where, you know, the margin and the unknown risk that's out there is not known until after these zero-dated options have actually expired. So, again, it's about hardening the ecosystem. That comes from the exchange landscape, it comes from the technology providers, and it comes from, you know, working with the clearing firms.
All right, Henry Wiener, I'm going to work my way back down this way, just so you guys know. Plenty of love going coming your way. Don't worry. Henry, talk to us a little bit about what you need to see to be worried, because it kind of felt like, in your answer, this isn't a big risk for you. What do you need to see to say, okay, this is Volmageddon 2.0?
I mean, the previous panel mentioned these. There's a lot of volatility selling activity, whether it's direct or it's a retail customer who says, I'm going to sell a put spread today. And then there's the bigger flow coming from a lot of these structured products where they're, you know, they're selling calls against, you know, $17 billion worth of underlying in the biggest one. And there's no real leverage in that. That was really interesting last panel. You know, like, look, people don't panic when you're long stock and you go up through your short strike. It just turns out you're not making money anymore, right? That's very different than you've sold naked calls in GameStop and it's, you know, pre-open, it's indicated up $150. So levered products using the short-dated options, I think, would stress me out. You know, that's when you kind of get into a TVIX style, like, if you're going to create a product that, you have to have a liquidation event. But the way these things are now, even the zero-day put selling, or they're one-day put selling ETFs, these QQQY, and a lot of these things are coming out of the woodwork. There's literally a gold rush in ETF creation using short-term options. Even those in a crash, they're going to lose money. And customers, you know, I think it's up to educating the customers to make sure they know what they're in for, because people do get sucked into this, oh my God, IWMY is paying a 60% div yield. I'm going to retire on, you know, on $100,000 that I have in the bank. And literally, these conversations are out there, and people don't really know what's going to happen in a drawdown. That said, these products are not going to implode. You're not going to have a forced unwind on an unlevered product. It's just, it's going to go to zero. I think that would be the biggest thing to worry about. The other thing that is important to understand is you know, you have zero-day trading in indexes and ETFs. There's discussion about doing it in single stocks. There's very active discussion. The brokers are like, well, shit, if it's, you know, if it's 3 million contracts a day in SPY, think of what it would be in Apple or Tesla, you know, or NVIDIA. That you have a there's a lot of challenges for customers when you get into single stock daily options. And the industry really needs to think about how to make sure customers don't have a terrible experience if those things kind of come to exist.
Okay. Before I come to you, I'm curious about the logic here. If you're talking about institutional funds hopping into the zero-dated options, why? Why now? Is this simply kind of an extension or an options version of sitting on the sidelines, waiting what happens in an environment that we don't really know how to navigate? What is the fundamental logic, or is there not one?
I think, you know, you had Tom Leake on the stage earlier. There's just demand for, I would say, more sophisticated solutions. So if you're an asset manager, you have an obligation to an active asset manager to outperform your benchmark and deliver value to the pensioners. So, I mean, essentially, they can afford to retire with their full lifetime plans. How do you do that with, you know, in an environment where cost of living due to inflation is an issue? I think you have to look in different pockets of the market. So I think daily options is new. It attracts attention. It's liquid. And, you know, if in our example, we're not as advanced as a SIBO. The Eurostoxx 50 dailies have only been around since August. Already 2 million contracts as of Friday, 15,000 ADV. Why? And it's heavily, again, the stats are heavily institutional, so it's only about, we estimate, 6% on the Eurostoxx dailies, about 16% on the DAX, which is more of a retail index, is retail participation. The rest is institution. I think it's very simple. You have the ability now to combine a long-term investment process, and I stress that as I see sort of the traditional equity bond portfolios as an investment process. Daily options for me are perhaps an overlay or something sophisticated to deliver an uncorrelated return on that portfolio.
I imagine the retail base isn't necessarily viewing it the same way. We're talking a lot about liquidity. Is the retail base that's perhaps fueling this and has been fueling this in a while, mixed with the institutional, are they prepared for some sort of liquidation event, as Henry put it, some sort of clearing accident? What might that look like? And because there's so much institutional money now in an environment where two, three years ago, it was only really retail, is that risk amplified? How do you view that?
So one of the key things we do is we educate clients not only on product, but also what happens when it moves against them, as well as when it goes for them. I mean, think about it. If you get a margin call for the very first time, you have no idea what that is. That's a horrible client experience. So for us, what we do is we explain and educate. What does it mean? What are the different ways that you can take care of it? I think that always has to come into play. I think the other thing is for a lot of these products, not all these products are on every single retail brokerage firm's platform. We have a product review committee that looks at all the various different products that are coming up. We identify whether we feel as though it is or isn't appropriate for our client base, and then we look to go roll that out. And that's done by pretty much every firm on the street. So for us, when we look at it, we look to make sure, hey, is the liquidity there? Do we feel comfortable the liquidity will be sustainable that's there? Then we start to release that product out there. We make sure clients understand what can happen so that they can take appropriate action. Also, what I'll say is the amount of technology that's gone into actually the risk component of retail platforms is unbelievable. So we're able to provide clients with the ability to see the downside risk. When the market starts moving in that direction, what does it mean to them? Different types of actions that come into place. So I do think a lot has evolved where there is the ability to actually help clients understand what they need to do when markets move against them along the way. And I think, again, when you bring those together, that's still a pretty powerful message to be able to say to people going and accessing these markets. But I mean, think about it this way. Right now, less than 4% of our active clients, our monthly average users, are actually trading options. So that's of a 20 million plus client base. So it's really relatively small for us. And I get that we talk about the fact that there's a lot of retail participation, and it probably is with some other firms that are out there. But at the same time, a lot of them are much more educated and understand where it is. I do think the more the institutional flows are kind of coming in there together a bit more. So retail is moving and it's looking at that product, but it's not diving into it, where yeah. I think some of the concerns and risks that you're kind of highlighting really would come into play.
Yeah, well, look, I'm a journalist. It's my job to play doomsday. I revel in it. So let's do more of that. The idea here, I'm curious about timing and how timing plays into it. A trader on Robinhood, if I pulled up Robinhood right now and traded a stock and via options, whatever, I still can't execute that trade fast enough or even as fast as a trader on the street with much more money at their disposal. The clearing just doesn't work that way, Henry. I'm sure you agree. How do you address that with the retail base in the instance of a liquidity accident? And let me kind of doomsday again this out for you. If there's a liquidity accident, you have a lot of money, a lot of institutional money pulled out, freaking out. You have the snowball event in the stock market, a big correction, whatever. Is the retail investor, via options, via retail trading, via the mechanisms that you have or at their disposal, can they catch up? Can they even detect what's happening before it happens?
So at least from our perspective, and I think with some other firms I've worked at, is we do so much scenario-based testing that's out there where we look at markets moving back and forth. And I'll go back to, I think it was February 8th, 2018, kind of at the beginning, where I think it was the S&P dropped just a monster level. It was just all of a sudden, it just was crashing down. And people were like, what are you going to do to get out of the marketplace? And so, first of all, I think when you provide access into the various markets, you have expectations for market providers and liquidity providers to stay in that market, right? And you have to have those rules, and I think that the exchanges work to have that. But at the same time, we are constantly modeling to see where you are 1, 2, 3, 4 standard deviation away so that when the market starts to move, and whether that's in price, liquidity, you know, whether it's also with market events that are out there or news events where we see what's on there, and then we have that ability to take action. So Can we make it perfect? No, I don't think there's anything in the world that I could ever say that would say, hey, we can make this a perfect scenario where we can guarantee every access out there. But I think the question of speed, while I think is incredibly important in many ways, it's really actually about the providers that are in that marketplace. So being able to execute out and relieve those positions, I think is something that most brokerage firms out there have the ability to do. I think a lot of time was spent during the pandemic improving capacity and capabilities. And I think that execution speed has never been better. But I do think this is where we have to make sure we're modeling so that when things do go awry, how can we help make sure that clients can get out of those positions? So there's no perfect answer to say I can make you feel perfectly comfortable when it comes to that doomsday event. But I do think that what we do is we become more intelligent by the data we take in to see how those markets move so we can then take that action and reduce those positions the best we can, as well as work with clients to do the same thing.
Henry, weigh in here.
I mean, it's interesting to think about to play the doomsday. I don't think the customers are as disadvantaged as you think. In a lot of ways, the customers are kind of consistently really have a wonderful experience with the kind of the ecosystem that works with payment for order flow, which is its own like debate. I guess it's illegal over here anyway. But there are I have friends that actively trade. I trade, and the customer experience, the liquidity is, it's probably too good in a lot of situations. I think a lot of market makers would be like, this liquidity doesn't actually make a lot of sense. But in reality, because you have a lot of different participants doing a lot of different things, it trades like water. The question is like, what happens in a dislocation? Like something horrible happens and you've got hours that the exchange isn't open, and we've kind of proved through some disasters and COVID and everything else that like the exchanges can adopt. The brokerage community, I see it, has done, we've come an incredibly long way. And these zero-day options, since that's what we're talking about, would not be possible 15 years ago when, like, literally a margin call was like, oh, hey, that account is down 80% of its liquidation value. We should probably call that guy. And, like, you get him and say, listen, you need to go to the bank or wire some money. And that's although there are probably a few pockets of how that still works, that's kind of the dinosaur era. It's all much more active risk management. And if a customer has something on that they can't afford, okay, hopefully with education, they shouldn't be in that position to begin with, but customers are gonna do what they want to do. And the kind of the wonderful thing about derivatives in general and zero DTE is whatever view you can imagine for tomorrow, you can turn into a trade. Now, if you're wildly wrong, you're gonna lose money. If you're kind of right, the liquidity is so good that you're probably going to do okay. You don't need to make 5% just to break even, which is really how it was not that long ago when people were crossing a big bid offer. They were paying a commission on top of that.
Yeah.
Now what we see is people make 2-3 cents on an option, in the retail side, and they're getting in and getting out and getting in. That's why it's trading like water, but that's creating all this liquidity. There's just a really diverse mix of customers and institutions doing things. So, that's kind of how I see it going.
Also, I would say is there's also multiple asset classes out there that you can also utilize, right? You have futures and options on futures. You've got 24-hour trading that's now started to come into the marketplace. And so I do think in some cases where that concern over speed and liquidity, you have more choices where you're able to do it. And I think the sophistication of being able to actually put in positions in other areas also can help take away that. So again, not to say that it's not there anymore, but I do think there are so many more tools at our fingertips to be able to really be able to hedge that risk when it comes in there in those extreme mechanisms that do occur. So and that's something you didn't have, 20, 25 years ago, to your point of getting, hey, let me send a letter that says you have a margin call coming down to the out there. Now it's in front of you this fast. We know where the markets are moving. You can move money instantaneously. So there's so many new technological advances that I think have also helped to sort of spread a little bit of that risk out because you can actually move that around.
All fair points.
There's trades that brokers won't let customers get into. Like I said, I spent a lot of time looking at the zero-day flow, and different brokers handle it very differently. But there's a big difference between a cash settled index and a physically settled ETF option. And in general, most brokers aren't letting customers get into expiring zero-day to physically settled options after some time of the day, 2:30, 3 o'clock. Just, nope, can't do it. We're protecting you. We're protecting ourselves. And like, I like to see that. And you know, when you mentioned curating the available products, I remember it bummed me out. I opened up an account somewhere and I was like, wait, I can't even find this four letter stock that's moved, you know, 80% that I actually want to trade. And it's because, no, we don't offer that one. It was a piece of garbage a week ago. We're not going to let you get into some trade that's just kind of not good. You know, and that it was very uncomfortable about it the first time. I'm like, I should be able to trade anything I want.
Yeah.
It's not really how it is, especially when you have this mix of, you know, there's, you know, probably hundreds of new brokers out there and platforms and innovators. It's very different than when you had, you know, seven or eight big brokers and they all kind of did the same thing.
So let's bring it back to the zero-dated options specifically. Do you think that could exacerbate a move in the stock market if you see a drop in NVIDIA and Apple tomorrow and therefore the entire index? Do zero-dated options magnify that?
I just don't think it gets that big. I think it gets a lot of attention. I think that, you know, I think NVIDIA is down, you know, maybe it's down 80 points today, right? It's the crazy one everybody's riding.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster. If you looked at some position and said, wow, there's 37,000 calls open, and we see that they were all bought on this specific kind of moment a week ago when the stock was at here, you know, people position for it and they try to kind of trade around that, but that's not really the kind of flow we're seeing. So that's like I said it before. My big concern is like, okay, somebody comes in and buys 100,000 zero-day puts that are 4% out of the money in the first hour of the day, and everybody's like, that's concerning. That's very different than what the reality is like. They trade back and forth, they trade small, they trade electronically, so it's very, you know, on the institutional side and the pro-cust side, it's very algo-based too. Like a lot of it is just formulaic. We're gonna do this trade every day, we have our rules, you know, we're gonna liquidate if this happens, we're gonna take profits if this other thing happens, we're gonna roll the position. It's just a very diverse mix, and that's why you see a consistent 1.5 million contracts in SPX and 3+ in SPY every day, whether the market's flat or going up, you know, 1.5% or going down 1.5%. You know,
David, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I was just going to make one comment. I mean, up until this point, I think, you know, these additional, you know, expiries and shorter duration, you know, products have allowed people, whether it's in the institutional or the retail space, to hedge out very specific exposures, whether it's, you know, macroeconomic data, whatever it may be. And, you know, they're doing this with broad-based, you know, index options and a select group of ETF options. So there's an awful lot of diversification there. We're not seeing, you know, these massive moves that you might see otherwise in an individual, you know, equity option. So I think a lot of people have seen, you know, positive growth in terms of the new evolution. But I think for all the discussions and reasons we're talking about here about what could go wrong, I think it's also important to note that before, you know, the zero-dated complex expands into potentially, you know, single equity options, that these types of things are discussed, because there are distinct differences from trading, you know, zero DTE index options with cash assignment versus physical delivery of underlying. And that brings into a whole other, you know, host of potential concerns if you have a single stock equity after something is theoretically expired worthless, or so you think, has an after hours earning event where stock gaps up or down, you know, 15-20%, and somebody thinks an option's worthless when in fact, you know, the market making community or the other side of that has up until 5:30 Eastern time to actually exercise that option. So again, there haven't been any significant blowups as of late, and I think it's because there's been measured progress all along the way. So in order to continue that before, you know, move forward to another potential you know, sector of the marketplace, I think those things need to be taken into account.
So the consensus seems to be that this is not as big of an issue as it's being made. So David, I'm curious though, why is there that panic about it? Because there is. It's showing up on traders' desks, it's showing up among retail investors, it's showing up at this panel. Why the panic if the numbers don't support it?
Well, I think there's been several instances previous, while they're not the, you know, exact same, you know, issue of what we're talking about with the zero-dated options, but you have seen other derivatives-related investments, some of the, you know, volatility-based ETNs and whatnot, where there were issues previously. So I think people are very cognizant that this entire ecosystem over the last 10 years has grown tremendously.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are, I think, want to be, you know, very cognizant of not taking three steps forward and five steps back. If a retail, you know, customer has a very bad experience as a result of trading a zero-dated option, there's a decent, you know, chance and likelihood they're not going to come back and trade that particular product. So I think there's an awful lot of caution and a lot of, you know, I'd say measured concern to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so I think that's why there's so much kind of, you know, cause around the issue.
Well, markets famously have short memories, right? It was only, what, 6 years ago that we had this massive blow up. 2021 was a whole other kind of crisis with retail. We're kind of due for one, to be honest. I think it's making people nervous that we haven't seen it. Zubin, join us here in terms of, we're talking a lot about the United States, the U.S. markets. How does this all apply to Europe? You can say it doesn't.
Well, we're very different. So why are we different? Bloomberg,
you tell me.
Bloomberg calculates a very interesting index, which is the percentage market cap of U.S. equities as a proportion of global equities. And that hit an all-time high, I think, of 71% recently due to NVIDIA.
Yeah.
So Europe has become, Eurex, I think, as an exchange, massively outperforms in a backdrop where most exciting new growth companies typically don't IPO in London or Xetra in Frankfurt, our exchange, but go to New York, essentially. So the market's different because there's this huge, I think, single stock ecosystem in the US. You know, you mentioned all the Magnificent Seven, where Europe has an equivalent, but we're talking a magnitude of 10x smaller in terms of market caps. So in terms of, I'd say, the title of this panel, market, you said the doomsday scenario, we're playing with magnitude smaller in Europe so far because, as I said, we only launched last year our daily options. I think where it has been relevant is, of course, in my role as product design, we look to the US markets in terms of what's happening there, what are investors interested in, and of course, this prompted us to launch the dailies. What do I expect to happen in European markets? I think, again, market structure, a lot of the flows on Eurex, especially, I would say, retail flows, they come to us in a secondary manner. So they come to us via structured products. The structured products issuers recycle that risk into delta, vega, hedges on Eurex. So it's not direct retail participation. And I think probably we continue to grow in ADV. I think no one expects us to reach the 50% share of options, zero DTE on Eurex that Cboe has. But I think, the trend of hedging, not paying excessive theta for hedges, I think is clear, will come to Europe. We have the liquidity, we have the support from liquidity providers. We just, we're at the stage where now we're switching on more and more clearers, so the big bank clearers, so that they can offer the product to their customers. So we're just at a different stage of growth.
The Robinhood UK president came on BTV this morning and he said something I thought was interesting. I keep coming back, it's just fresh in my mind.
Yep. And
he said that Europe, in terms of retail and options, is where the US was 10 years ago when we were still dealing with brokers and really high fees. So there's like a 10-year delay. You're talking a lot about liquidity here, comparing it to the United States. Now, yes, the US is a much bigger market. That offers it a lot of not only liquidity cushions, but cash cushions. And if something does go wrong, it goes wrong at a bigger level. Henry keeps saying that there's this high bar, very, very high bar. Is there a lower bar for things to go wrong in Europe simply because the magnitude is not there, simply because it's structured 10 years later than the way the US is?
A leading question. I follow your logic.
Push back.
I would say, again, the combination of where you could get, let's say, a liquidity gap would have to be essentially, and I think we touched upon it here on the panel, would be idiosyncratic risk, so single stock option risk, or I can only think of, maybe an asset class that has a kind of jump diffusion process, like a credit default swap, for instance, where maybe in the OTC world there are very short-dated sort of crash protection offered. Certainly in the listed world, I definitely do not see that risk. Eurex, sort of sales pitch here, obviously from a risk management perspective, I believe they can call margin on an hourly basis. All the big GCMs, our general clearing members, are for sure at this point in time, I'm pretty sure, over-margined. So in terms of the risk posed in, yes, a smaller market compared to the US, it's no less professional and sort of, I think, risk managed to a very high degree of scrutiny.
I'm sure it is. I'm not trying to give Europe any sort of bad rep. Don't worry. We have about, let's call it 2 minutes here, and I like to leave my panels with a little bit of skepticism for the audience. So if there isn't anything to worry about in zero-dated options, where's the risk? We'll go down the line very quickly.
You had an article this morning, two abbreviations, CRECLO. So
ooh, okay.
Commercial real estate collateralized loan obligations. I again, sorry, it sounds like a pitch. We just launched on Monday FTSE EPRA and the REIT futures, so REIT futures.
Okay.
I think you had Carson Block in December, the Muddy Waters chap, saying he's going short REITs because he thinks eventually this sort of the delinquency rates will go up. I often think markets tend to suffer when there's a sort of contagion risk in another asset class.
Yeah.
And the mechanism for transfer into equities is usually some kind of portfolio concentration. So a sort of carry trade that's in everyone's portfolio. And I, and you've seen it now with the regional banks in the US where they all have to a certain extent these CRE yeah. exposure. I wonder if that could be the trigger for a broader market pullback.
All right, CRE and CLOs.
I think from my perspective, it's more about the lack of ability for retail to participate in other markets globally. I think it's interesting. You have SIBA, who's expanding, who has obviously a presence here, a presence in Europe, a presence in Asia. You've got us coming into the UK market. The fact of the matter is retail investors are looking to access these markets. And right now, if you continue to only push them to the US, the danger of is liquidity won't come here. Market makers are looking to come back here. They're looking to participate in the market. So what we have to be able to do is provide a structure for them so we can have those retail flows be able to offset some of those institutional and market maker trading or points of interactions. And I think if we don't do that, what you're going to do is you're going to risk because everything's going to continue to go to the U.S. And that's a bigger risk to me as you look at it because now all of a sudden you have concentration risk. It's already there. But if you can't pull them other places, whether that's APAC or whether that's here in Europe, I think that becomes a bigger concern.
All right, Henry.
I wasn't that worried until Zubin said that the U.S. equity market's 70% of the world. That seems kind of wacky.
Just a little.
just a little. I think liquidity, I kind of agree in terms of, you know, we do want to see a global ecosystem of equity derivatives, you know, that's healthy and fair and like liquid and where people can have a smooth trading experience. You know, like I was at a Bloomberg event in New York when Tom Sosnoff was speaking and he said something like, you know, give smart people efficient products and it will explode. And, you know, that's, to me, that's really what's happened in the US. Like a lot of things have come together to make things efficient. You know, commissions going down to zero certainly made the customer experience better. But you also have technology and, you know, this you know, technology kind of dealing with the fact that we have so many new things you can trade. And that, I guess, is, you know, I want to see that go to other places because I don't think, you know, great, everybody come trade, you know, SPX at Cboe, definitely. But I do want to see a kind of a global selection so that, you know, and that's what actually lately I've been putting a lot of work into. Just like, let me try to get my arms around the global derivatives thing. And then, you know, I was looking at volume in India and really trying to understand what the heck is going on. And I just want to see, like, you know, kind of healthy markets kind of spread across the globe.
Okay, David, final word.
Yeah, I would say overregulation. I think the institutional space and the retail space has had, you know, an awful lot of benefits of some of these newer products and a liquidity environment where the liquidity providers have been able to support that demand. There's a number of different regulatory proposals that are out there that, you know, could impact, you know, the market fragility from the liquidity providing perspective, which then obviously echoes its way through the ecosystem and has the ability to impact the end investor. So overregulation, I think, is something that needs to stay front and center on everybody's mind.
I'm having a flashback to Roaring Kitty testify in front of Congress. The things we remember from 2021. All right, folks, we're out of time, but thank you guys again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.